Good evening. Thank you all for coming tonight. Education is of central importance to the future of our great state, and we are glad to welcome three candidates for state office. We have with us State House candidate Representative Bill Thomas. Also, we have State House candidate Jonathan Christ Tompkins, and joining us we have State Senate candidate and sitting Senator Albert Kukesh. Unfortunately, his challenger Senator Bert Stedman couldn't join us tonight. We look forward to hearing how each of these candidates will work to better education in the state of Alaska. This is how this debate's going to work. Each candidate will receive 3 minutes for their opening statements. We have a number of questions formulated by school board members and by members of the administration. Each candidate will receive again 3 minutes to respond to each of the questions, and then once each of the candidates has had their initial 3 minutes to respond, we will open it up to for each candidate will have 1 minute if they wish to respond to the answers they have already heard. Eli White will keep track of time for us so we don't run too far over time. Everyone needs to get home at a reasonable hour, right? So, and then finally they'll receive 1 minute for their closing statements. So, I'm gonna open it up for the opening comments. We will start with Representative Thomas. I think you have to flip the switch.
Thank you, Patrick. Thanks for putting this on. I'm Bill Thomas, born and raised in Haines. Went to school here, graduated from Haines High in 1965. And I have four children that went through the school system here in Haines, all graduated from Haines High. I know the importance of education, and spent 4 years on the school board here. I've been, I don't know what you want to know about, but I've been in the legislature 8 years, 6 years in finance, 2 years as the vice chair, 2 years as the co-chair in developing the operating budget for the state of Alaska. And it's not an easy task, easy job. You have to balance with what money you have and let, you know, help different people in different departments. It's not easy. It's cumbersome. It's hard. You have to pick, and you try to figure out who got what year before. And it's not always perfect, and you don't make friends. I've been a commercial fisherman for 43 years. I still fish. I spent all summer fishing. I started fishing in right after session got over, and of course, you know, I live in Haines, live up on the hill here. I call it with a house that 88 built, though the commercial fishermen knew 88 was a good year. And so I do live in Haines, lived in Clukwan for 17 years, and moved back to Haines, been here, I believe, almost 20 now, and so it's been a long time. Big family, I'm related to everybody in the valley, up the valley, Clukwan, quarter Hotch, quarter Willard, so that tells you the whole story there. I have to not go through the Clinkett introduction because that takes 3 minutes itself. So my brothers, we all went to school here. My uncles went to school here. I have uncles that graduated clear back in 52. So we were very familiar with the education system in Haines and how it has evolved and changed through the years. So I'm looking forward to what people think and how I compared education. I had children went to school in Clukwan. And then I had kids that went halfway Clukwan, halfway Haines, and then just Haines. And I can tell you the big difference. And I always pay tribute to the one teacher they had in Clukwan, Bob Andrews. I'm not afraid to say he did an excellent job with the students that he had. And we made the transition to town. So I look forward to this. And again, thank you. I can go on and on, but 3 minutes is fine. So we'll go from there. I'll even give you, is that 1 minute or 1 second? So. Okay, so you didn't tell us the rules. But anyway, thank you, Patrick. We'll look forward to going forward here. Thanks.
All right. Mr. Christ Tompkins?
So I'm running to be representative for District 34, which I like to think is sort of the heart and soul of Southeast Alaska. And District 34, of course, includes Haines and Clukwan. I'm from Sitka. I was born and raised there. But also every little village throughout Southeast. So Angoon and Cake, down to Metlakatla, Heidelberg. It's, I mean, really, I think, sort of the essence of Southeast Alaska, which is rural Southeast Alaska. And for the last 4 months, I've more or less been a human pinball bouncing around the region, spending 4 days in Angoon, 5 days in Cake, 6 days in Heidelberg, 6 days in Metlakatla, trying to more or less live in each community. And because this is rural Southeast Alaska, I really believe that representation, in the full sense of the word, really knowing the communities and knowing the people and knowing their concerns, is of vital importance, and that's what I've been trying to do. As far as policy, I think there are a few very important issues in this campaign which mirror the core responsibilities and functions of state government in Alaska. And first is I'd like to say, appropriations and revenue, and to me, oil taxes of utmost concern, because that's where all the money in Alaska comes from. And I'm strongly opposed to the proposed $2 billion oil company tax cut. But the other core function of state government that I think is, of course, hugely important and is spoken for by the setting of this debate is education. And it's the cornerstone of every community, especially these small communities, including Haines. And I know the role, the prominence that Haines schools have in this community. And the same is true in Sitka, and it's equally true in all the small villages throughout the Southeast. And public education is a unique institution. It's a melting pot for everybody, no matter background, socioeconomic circumstance, to all melt and mingle with each other. And you gain an understanding for people from across the spectrum in education, in public education, growing up through the schools. And it's what really brings a community together. It's a glue that's of vital importance. And I'm a believer in a strong, robust public education. I'm a proud product of public education, as all three of us are growing up in Sitka. And it's very much the gateway for opportunity if it's properly funded and respected its role in communities. And in Alaska, I think that couldn't be more important, and that Southeast, I think, is very much at a crossroads. And the future and opportunity for the future is increasingly of concern for a lot of people, especially a lot of young people. And going into the next 90 minutes, I'm excited to talk about the ins and outs of public education, and strongly believe that it's a foundation for an investment in the future, and hope that state policy reflects that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. First, let me tell you that I appreciate being here, and I appreciate that this is put on. It gives me an opportunity to be here. It's been an interesting summer already, and I've spent most of it in the new district of mine, which includes Sitka, Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Saxman. But to get on to the statement, I was raised in Angoon, Alaska, small little Tlingit village on Admiralty Island. We didn't have a high school, so I went to the first 8 years of my life, or school, in Angoon. Then went to Mount Edgecombe High School and graduated from Mount Edgecombe High School. And then went to Alaska Methodist University in Anchorage and received an undergraduate degree from Alaska Methodist University, and had decided earlier on in my life that I wanted to go to law school. So I went to law school at the University of Washington. I received my law degree, a Juris Doctor degree, in 1976. And I moved back to Angoon, and none of the law firms there would hire me. So I decided I better be a commercial fisherman. I fished most of my life. In fact, I was 13 years old when I started sailing out of Hawk Inlet. I put myself through high school, college, and law school on a seine boat out of Angoon, Alaska, called the Mary D. Fished Indian Islands for most of my life. I've also fished Bristol Bay 2 years, and I fished Lynn Canal for a lot of years with some of the people here in this room. I still have my boat, by the way. Kept it. My wife made me give up my permit. She said, I got elected to the House of Representatives. She said, you can't be away all summer and be away all winter. You got to make a choice. So kept the boat. But my wife, Sally, is a school teacher. She graduated University of Washington also. We have 5 children in Angoon. My family's a very proactive, education family. I have 4 brothers and 4 sisters, and we have children now, and at last count, we have 27 college degrees in our family from Little Angoon, Alaska. So we're a very active education family. Four attorneys in our family, five teachers, four people with master's degrees. It just goes on and on, and it's just something we're really proud of. Education is important to me. It's important to me all of my life. I've never voted against education in the state house, and I've been in the state house for 8 years. I was in state senate for 8 years, and I've never voted no on education funding in that area also. Very strong believer in education. So when I heard this form was going on, I'm glad to come here, because I think I've always voted right on education funding, on education advancements in the state, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here to tell you a little bit about myself and to tell you where I stand on education funding. Thank you very much.
Thank all of you for coming. So we're going to start out with sort of a lighthearted icebreaker question, if you will. So think back to when you were in school. Was there a memorable teacher, either positive or negative? And please explain what made that teacher memorable for you. We'll start with Representative Thomas.
You put me in a tight spot here. I had a lot of teachers when I was growing up, and I think to pick one would be wrong. You know, I have several that I listened to and helped me change my life. Minding you, now single-parent child, I need a lot of guidance to get slapped in the head, say head the right way, Bill. So I'm going to mention them all, just, and not all the teachers, because just the ones that I thought made a difference in my life were Trudy Hebert, Harold Hopper, Ray Miniker, Carl Ward, who I love because of the history classes that he taught, Lenny Douglas in English, even though I wasn't a stellar English student, and Mr. Henderson, Olrud and Mrs. Olrud. You know, probably miss a few, but off the top of my head, every one of them has helped me learn, grow, and I had a bookkeeping teacher. I can't remember what her name is right now, but everybody, you know, when you're, again, a single parent child, you're running around and people always are watching over you. The old terminology, it takes a village to raise a child. I had probably more fathers than any one person in Haines because, you know, the people tell you go home, and the teachers, you know. Joyce and I were high school sweethearts. It was forbidden to hold hands. I'd spent a lot of time in Mr. John's room. He was the superintendent. Carl Ward was the principal. I'd be standing in the corner for holding hands, and I went through the school here, and heaven forbid, they were in school when Mr. and Mrs. Olrud were in school, because they'd probably be out of school. But they were all very instrumental in helping me grow up, and of course, Ed James, my basketball coach. You know, I think being in sports showed you discipline and time. If you were late, you ran laps. Nobody wanted to run extra laps or do anything else like that. But I think if I was to pick one, it'd be Carl Ward and his history classes that he had taught. I still love Civil War, that era. I'll watch every movie, every documentary that comes out on that, because he was such a great teacher when it came to history. Mind you, now I was sitting in his history class when John F. Kennedy got shot. So, you know, it's how old I am. People want to do the math, but so there are moments in time that had happened that will stay in your mind forever. So, but just their guidance, and I still see him. I still talk to them. And those, if I make sure to look out here, Mr. Olrud's not here. He's telling me all the time what to do. So still, you know, people never forget that they were your teacher, and you never forget they were. So I would say they were all great teachers. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Christ-Tompkins?
I would definitely agree that the hardest part of this question is to choose only one, and that they're countless. I was thinking of my high school English teacher, whose name is Miss Polson, Kathy Polson. And I had her for three different classes through high school. And I think Miss Polson, and even though I'm no longer her student, I still want to call her Miss Polson, because I think there's this sort of vestigial respect that all my teachers, I still want to call Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so. And Miss Polson, I think, yeah, really exemplified what I think a good teacher does, and that is care for his or her students in a meaningful way. And with Miss Polson, I was going in high school, I was trying to sort of figure out my identity, as I think most high schoolers are, and she would consistently make time for me allow me to do independent studies and sort of coach me both academically and personally, respond to emails on weekends. And I mean, it's, if anything, sort of a friendship bordering on mentorship. And I mean, I would agree with Bill that, I mean, teachers in essence are surrogate parents. And I mean, in elementary school, parents take care of kids during the evenings and afternoons, and teachers take care of them during the day. And they're all take equally important roles in sort of a child's formative years. And I think there's no doubt that a good teacher changes lives. And that's an it's a fact that I think should be acknowledged when it comes to funding education and teacher salaries. And I mean, we think of doctors as a hugely prestigious profession. Everybody aspires to be a doctor. It pays well. It's well respected. And a doctor takes care of the body. And there's a tremendous degree of trust required to see a doctor, to trust your body with somebody else. And a teacher takes care of the mind, which I think is a responsibility of equal importance. And helping shape and grow somebody's mind and character in the years of school. And that teachers and doctors are not, I suppose, say, considered on par, I think speaks, unfortunately, to the status that teachers have in our society. And there are many teachers who I think rise to the occasion. And I think it would be better for education if the profession of teaching was regarded as the same as, say, a lawyer or a doctor. And I think, at least on a personal level, many teachers I had make that equivalency very much a reality in my mind, and Mrs. Poulsen is one of them.
Senator Kukesh?
Thank you. I grew up a little bit different than most people. I grew up in a Tlingit village with the population was almost 100% Alaska Native. And for my first 8 years of school, the only teachers I had were non-Native. I never saw a Native teacher when I was growing up in Angoon. The only people I saw who were professionals in a school, maybe semi-professional, were the people who were janitors and the people who worked on the yards or who worked on the furnaces, and they were Native. I never saw a Native teacher when I was growing up until I went to Mount Edgecombe High School, and I met a gentleman named Gil Truitt. He was the first Native teacher I ever saw, and I never knew Natives could aspire to be teachers. So he had a profound influence on me because I was always asking him, how did you get where you are? And so he took it upon himself to mentor me and to work with me. And I think my going to college and my going to law school was because of meeting him and having that kind of relationship with him. And I'm not saying this to be disrespectful to anybody in the non-Native community, but you have to remember I grew up different. In fact, I like to tell people that I didn't know I was a minority until I became a Democrat in the House of Representatives in Alaska. But I guess I do want to tell you that Gil Truitt, who was and is still alive and is still retired now, and Mount Edgecombe was a Bureau of Indian Affairs school when I went to there as a high school. It wasn't a state school like it is now. And so to see Gil Truitt there and to have him mentor me, I guess I have to remember that he was the person I really looked up to and appreciated.
All right, thank you guys all again. The next question, where does ensuring quality education fall on your list of priorities? Please explain your rationale. And we will start with Mr. Christ Tompkins.
I think there's no greater priority. Education is the future. It's hugely important. And, I mean, the state concerns itself with funding roads, energy projects, filling potholes, building power lines, all the physical infrastructure that make communities and are hugely important to communities. But none of the physical infrastructure means anything if there aren't people capable, educated, skilled to be able to take the infrastructure and create something with it. Be entrepreneurs. An entrepreneur can't do anything if there's no physical infrastructure. But if you don't have sort of the human infrastructure of capable and capable citizens, capable people who've come out of the public education system, physical infrastructure means nothing. I mean, it's human resources is sort of this cliche that doesn't have any meaning anymore. But I mean, humans are our greatest resource. Like, people are important, and education is what cultivates value in people and ability in people. And if we're to have a strong future in Southeast or Alaska, we need to make sure that the students coming out of our public education system are ready to take on the challenges of the next 10, 20, 50 years. And education is what will make that a possibility, a reality, that we have a strong workforce for the future and entrepreneurs for the future. And so I don't think you can have any more important a priority than education.
Senator Kukesh?
I mentioned earlier that I was in a House for 8 years and a Senate for 8 years, and I always voted for education funding as a priority. And I've thought to myself many a times that if we only had enough money to do one thing in a state, I would give up capital projects, I would give up increases in government programs, and I would fund education. I've always been an advocate in the state for an endowment for education, and I think we could still do it. You have $44 billion sitting in a permanent fund, and there's an ownership by the people in the state, but I think that they would allow us to take part of that money, not take it out of a permanent fund, but at least create a permanent fund out of the endowment for education. I just hate the idea of having people who are educators come to the state and actually almost have to beg for money every year. But if you had an endowment, then you wouldn't have to do that. I think you can take maybe even half of that money or a third of that money and turn an endowment into an education endowment for the state of Alaska, and it would solve a lot of our problems going forward. No matter what oil happens with oil, no matter what happens to state economy, if you have an endowment, you can take care of your children, you can take care of education funding. And I'm still an advocate for an endowment for education. But if I had to, I would vote education funding first before everything else. When people say our children are your future, you have to believe that. And the only way you can believe that and make it happen is to say, I'll fund them first. And if I have to, I'll fund them last before everything else. If you have to cut everything else out, education funding has got to be the priority no matter what in this state. It's over $1 billion right now for the formula, and I've seen it increase from $650 million over the years, and the costs are going to continue to go up because costs are going up. And if we have to make a priority in the next legislative session, I'm willing to do that.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you. Since I've been in the legislature since 2004, the foundation formula, just the portion for student-based allocation, has gone up $1,511. That's significant when you look at it, especially there was years before that was pretty flat. I think education is a priority. We look at it, but you got to look back as to how much money we had available. Everything's based on whether we have money or not. If you don't have the money, you can't fund much of anything, not alone capital projects that Jonathan was talking about. But you have to have a balance, and that's what the legislature tries to do, is create a balance. There are people that we've educated to become engineers, to go out and do voc ed that need jobs. We have to put capital projects out there. We educate them, put them out in the street, and they don't have a job, give me a break. You know, we got to train, after we train them, we got to make sure there's a job available for them. And so you have to have some balance in the capital and project budget also. Now, just to let you know, 24%, because I, as co-chair of finance, I developed the operating budget this year, 24% of our general fund monies goes to education, just K-12. Another 11% is for college. 35% of our general fund money goes for education. And for anybody to say it's not a priority of the state is wrong. It is. I can't speak for Albert, but we have fought for one thing that we call cost differential since I've been in there and he was there, and that's to get rural communities to have an automatic increase through the years for try to get them up with the cost, because your energy costs in rural Alaska is more than Anchorage, and especially Anchorage and the Mat-Su, and now Sitka, Petersburg, Wrangell, Ketchikan, because of the hydro that they have. I mean, they're paying 11 to 13 cents a kilowatt, and we're still at 19 or 22. I have villages that are paying 58 cents. Some are, one was high as 86. Education, I believe, yes, it's a high priority, and people are complaining they didn't get an increase this last year, but you had 3 solid years of $100 a year increase. We want to see what we get for that $300 now. Nobody makes an investment unless you see what you're getting back, and this year we'll see. And I think that the scores are out, the tests are in, and we'll see what happens now. So, again, I think there's a balance. We look at it, the price of oil, heaven forbid, falls. Oil production is going down. Oil goes down at the same time. We're in trouble. Some place is going to make cuts, and I hope it's not education. But you got state employees, too, that are sensitive to their salaries, too. So everything is critically balanced, you know. So thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Royal, I don't think. Ford funding?
We're going to proceed to the next question unless any of the candidates want a minute to respond to anything they heard. We will once again begin with Mr. Christ Tompkins if he wishes to.
Yeah, I was just going to respond to the last question regarding Ford funding. In a word, I support Ford funding. I think it's hugely important. And, I mean, every year you've got school districts, school boards, teachers, administrators, parents in the dark about how much money is going to be coming back to schools. And there's just no reason for that. And, I mean, I'd like to think I approach political issues with an open mind and see sort of a diversity of perspective on really any given issue. But with something like Ford funding, I think it's just really common sense that if you're running a business, if you're running a government, if you're running anything, you have to have the ability to plan. And if you don't know what your budget is going to be or how much money you're going to have for the next year, you don't have the ability to plan. And that's the reality with school districts across Alaska right now. And because the legislature has refused to forward fund, although it did so for 3 years in the late, I think 2006 through 2009, but has failed to do so since then, every year school districts are playing a guessing game with how much money they will have to be able to hire teachers, to pay for student activities. And so I think it's hugely important that forward funding is implemented in Alaska, which it's not right now.
Okay. Senator Kukesh, would you like to respond to the things you've heard so far?
Are we on the next question on forward funding?
That's what Jonathan addressed. However, I was asking whether or not anyone would like to respond to what they heard so far regarding to the second question, where does education fall on your list of priorities?
I'm sorry, Ro, that's my mistake. I got mixed up with the order.
It's all right. We can certainly move on to the next question, which does have to do with forward funding. Do you support forward funding with increases to the base student allocation every year? Please explain your position. And we'll start with Senator Kukesh.
Well, just a comment. Last year, the Senate put a plan together with forward funding in it for 3 years. And we did increase the student base allocation. Unfortunately, it didn't make it through the two-house process or because the governor didn't support it. I like the idea of forward funding. I've always voted for it. I think it's a great idea. I don't like the idea, and I said it earlier, about school districts having to come in and ask for money and almost to the point of even begging for money. I like the idea of giving forward funding so people can plan, for school districts can plan. I don't like the idea of having pink slips go out every spring because you don't know what your funding is going to be next year. So every time there's been a forward funding bill in the Senate, I voted for it. And I would continue to vote for it. I believe in forward funding. I like the idea of forward funding. I also like the idea of increasing the student base allocation every time we can afford to do it. And Bill is absolutely right. Sometimes oil may forbid you from doing it, but if we have the ability to do it, even if it's the only thing we do fund, I believe in increasing the money to the student base allocation. Because one of the things we have to remember is that education funding requirements are in the Constitution. There is no requirement for capital projects funding in the Constitution. And sometimes we forget that. So I believe that in the Constitution is correct. We need to fund it, and I believe in forward funding of it.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you. For clarity, forward funding of education has been going on since I've been, probably about 5-6 years back. But the forward funding incremental increases happened for 3 years. We do not automatically increase the budget, but we do forward fund 1 year. It's like shooting pool. You shoot one and carry one. We always have 1 year ahead that we've been funding, and I believe it's going back 4 or 5 years now since we got into oil money. We didn't do it previously because oil was at, even when I went in, it was $35 a barrel. Now it's at $113, so we can afford to, but maybe next year not, because just to balance our budgets, $100 plus whatever the capital budget is. But we do forward fund the education, but we don't have automatic incremental increases. And I think that's what people get confused about. Yes, you want automatic increases? I think you can't force us to do them unless we know, like Senator Kukesh says, we know that we're going to have the money. We don't know what's going to happen from year to year, so they're very careful in what they're doing. And then just so I got the time, is when the school districts come in and ask you for money, we sit there, we have 13 in finance, and there's 10 majority members, and they sit there and we write down, every one of the staff has to sit there, what is the priority that the school districts presented this year was energy costs. Now, if you're trying to fund energy costs, vocab costs, PERS, TERS retirement that we have to fund beyond what the school districts fund, we have to sit there and say, what do we fund? And we couldn't fund them all, and nobody was happy, but that's the way it is. I mean, we'll get into maybe the equation of what the local contribution is later on, but we had to do we have to balance what we have. And we do forward fund, but not automatic increases like it was for the 3 years. That 3 year increase took us 5 years to get the cost differential. Why? I think if Senator Kukesh probably agreed, because we're rural. Urban areas immediately got their, aid money they got for special needs aid immediately, and we had to go out, I believe, 5 years to get the cost differential. Yes, I believe forward funding, we do, but not incremental automatic increases. Very hard to do when you don't know if you have the money. Right now we have a surplus, but that surplus can be gone in 4 or 5 years. We'll get that's another issue. So thanks.
All right, Mr. Christ-Tompkins already touched on this issue, but if you would like to take a couple more minutes to do so again,
I'll touch on base student allocations. I haven't given a sneak preview on forward funding, and with base student allocation, I mean funding for schools for each student. It's right now not pegged to inflation. So effectively, every year over year, there's a funding cut to schools in Alaska. And I don't think that's right. And unfortunately, I think the State House has demonstrated great leadership. Excuse me, the State Senate has demonstrated great leadership on that issue and tried to peg education funding with inflation. So as costs rise, so does funding. The State House, however, has not done so. And just to touch on forward funding quickly, right now, no school district in Alaska knows what their budget is going to look like for the academic year after this one. None, because the state isn't forward funding 3 years at a time like it did back 3 or 4 years ago. And so the fact of the matter is forward funding isn't happening like it has happened and like it should happen. And Representative Thomas raised the point whether there's money available to forward fund. And the state of Alaska ran a multi-billion-dollar surplus last year. So if it's a question of whether there's available money, I think the answer is a resounding yes. I mean, we're talking about giving a $2 billion tax cut to oil companies. So there seems to be money available for that. I think there should be money available for a modest $50 to $60 million increase to education funding. I mean, that's like comparing a pebble to a giant boulder, I mean, as far as relative scale. And so to say there's no money available to increase education funding with inflation while we're talking about $2 billion tax cuts, I don't think is consistent, and I don't think is in the best interest of the state. And furthermore, when we talk about expenses in schools for teacher salaries, for instance, or for heating oil, for anything else, I mean, the argument is made sometimes that happens, and, you know, tough. But, I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind the context of what the state is funding, and I think there's a double standard. We're saying, and the state house has said, that teacher salaries, you know, shouldn't be given rises to keep up with inflation and cost of living. Yet the state, this last year even, funded state employees, Department of Fish and Game, other bureaucrats, a 2% inflationary salary increase. So there's a double standard. State employees are getting raises, teachers are not. I don't think that's right.
Okay. Now we're going to open it up for follow-up statements again, and I would like to remind the candidates, these follow-up statements are 1 minute if you wish to address what the other two candidates said about the following question. So that would be the one about supporting forward funding with increases to base student allocation. And you're okay. Representative Thomas, do you have anything to
thank
address?
You again. Need to make it very clear. You can call Carl Rose at the Alaska Association of School Boards. We do forward fund, but we don't have automatic incremental increases. Big difference. The school district, if the superintendent was here, knows that he's getting X number of dollars next year. It's in the budget. It's been funded for years, but not an increase, an automatic increase. I just want to point out that we don't negotiate also with the unions that the state has. They're all negotiated separately. So we don't have oversight on the contract negotiations. The administration does that. Then they come in and give us what they've agreed on. We do not handle the negotiations at the school board level. So to say, you know, if you want an automatic increase, it's in school costs. Again, I think there's a, I can't remember what the equation is for teaching and then costs. And it's like, I think it might be like 70-30 for energy costs. But energy costs have gotten so high that the equation doesn't work. So anyway, thanks.
All right. Shall we move on to the next question then? This next question addresses generally the same topic. As the cost of providing education increases, how would you advocate helping schools meet these costs? And we'll start with Representative Thomas.
Thank you. Well, the idea is to, when you look at the total, I think one of the, I'm going to point out the boogeyman in the closet is the federal government right now. We get a lot of federal funds, and sequestration, if that goes forward, an automatic state cut in Alaska, it could be education. So we're going to have to be very careful as to where we're going to fund, where the money is going to get cut from the federal government. I mean, it's going to be huge. I think we're supposed to be 10% federal loss of federal funds. But in talking to Congressman Young, because the state's sitting on $40 billion in the permanent fund and a bunch in the reserve, they may say we'll take 30% from Alaska and we take less from somebody else because we're so rich. But the base student allocation is probably the way you're going to fund increases. But we're unique in Southeast. We lost $18 million of Tongass Forest receipts. Now, mind you that I put a bill in there to try to close that gap, and the first comment I got from the speaker when I put it in, he said, "You mean you guys get $18 million outside the formula?" I just hid that because knowing the people like I do, they would have just deducted it from the amount of money that we're getting. So, you know, and then in Southeast, you have all the schools are shrinking. So it's not just increasing the formula. We got to get more students in the school. When you lose 50 kids, 75 kids, 300, I can find some numbers here where, you know, the student count has gone down, and people try to offset it by getting more student-based allocation. You need children in the school. But, you know, if you want to increase education, get kids back into school, and you get your money back.
All right, Mr. Chris Tompkins.
Representative Thomas said base student allocation is how you fund schools, and I agree. Except if we're flat funding schools, we're flat funding. If we're flat funding education funding and base student allocation, we're flat funding schools. And so the question is, as education costs increase, how do we meet those costs? And if we're flat funding education, we're not meeting cost increases, and it's that simple. And that's what's happening with schools right now. And when we talk about forward funding, Representative Thomas is right. Every year, the base student allocation promises $5,600 approximately for every child in our schools in Alaska. And that's constant. Now, the question is whether that will increase. And every year, the state legislature plays a game of sort of pokey-pokey, trying to get some sort of stopgap measure in. School districts are facing huge deficits every year. You guys read the headlines here in Haines. It's true in Sitka and every other school district in Southeast Alaska. It's a question of how many teachers are going to get pink slips every year. And that's going to continue to happen unless there's real forward funding, which is forward funding that actually meets the cost of meets the increasing cost of education in Southeast Alaska. So base student allocation is how we meet the rising costs of education in Alaska. But flat funding is not doing that, and that's what's happening right now, and that's why schools are hurting. And sure, we could try to import truckloads of kids, and more kids means more money, but proportionally, schools are still losing. In fact, if we were to import a whole bunch of kids into Haines School District, the Haines School District would probably be seeing more red, because proportionally, per student, there's not enough money to go around. And so, tying or pegging education funding in Alaska to inflation, which is just merely keeping expenses on par with funding, I think is absolutely the answer. And it's not happening right now, and I'd like it to make it happen.
Senator Kukesh.
Thank you. Thank you. There are two or three things that I'm thinking about and I'd like to have us have a discussion about today. The student-based allocation is not inflation-proofed, and you're right, the legislature should have done its job years ago. We haven't been able to get that as a question before the legislature. There are a lot of people that don't want to talk about inflation-proofing the formula, but we have to. But that being aside, I really think that there should be different funding streams for things outside of the formula. Let me tell you the way I look at it in the formula. When you get a base student allocation for the formula, you have to take all of your educational costs out of it. All of your education costs. I really think that we as a state could afford to do different funding streams, for example, for technology. Technology is a new area. It's relatively new in the world, in the state. And we're asking our schools to keep up with technology through the student-based allocation money. I really think that the state can afford to do something different and have a funding stream that would be just for technology for all of our schools in the state. The second thing you do on a different funding stream is energy. And we've had little experiments with giving energy money to schools on a piecemeal basis, but we could have a different funding stream for energy. And let me give you a thinking part for you to think about, because we have something called the Power Cost Equalization Program in Alaska. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. It gives subsidies to those communities in Alaska who have high energy costs but no way to defray them, like a hydro system or a wind system or any solar systems in the state. So we give a power cost equalization program, but schools are not part of that power cost equalization program. I think if we funded that to a better number and made schools part of the power cost equalization program, we would probably save the schools a lot of money. And it's just an example of thinking outside the box, trying to say, let's not take all of the money out of student-based allocation. Let's get some different funding streams for those different areas of the school that shouldn't come out of student-based allocation. Technology, energy. We right now require that they come out of the student-based allocation. And when you don't inflation-proof it, you're already behind the eight ball. You're already losing. Because now you have something that's not inflation-proof. You have less money than you had last year, even though you got an increase. And you still have to take care of your technology needs. And you still have to take care of your energy needs. And every year those grow.
All right. Moving on to follow-up comments about the last question. It is Representative Thomas. Do you have anything to follow up on? Okay. Mr. Kreis Tompkins? Okay. All right. Then we will move on to the next question. Moving on.